Okay, hello. As I sit here recording this, it is Saturday, January 18th, 9:30 p.m. Pacific time, and for the last several hours, this has been the image on people's phone screens when they open up their TikTok app. They did it. The sons of bitches really actually went and did it. The conversation that you're about to see with my guest today, Francesca Ramsey, was recorded earlier today, and we still, at the time of recording our conversation earlier today, didn't know if this was actually going to happen. Every single day of the last few weeks, while this has been a top story, while the TikTok ban has been fresh in the minds of American citizens and people around the world, the news has changed every single day. There have been so many developments that have made it look like it could go one way or another, or there could be some kind of last-minute thing. And just a few hours ago in the United States, the app did indeed go dark. I gotta say, I called this all the way back when the ban first passed about 9 months ago. I was one of the people saying, this feels like it's for real. I think this is really going to happen. I don't see any reason why it would not. The thing that made me feel like it was definitely going to happen was the overwhelming bipartisan support. And that is the thing that feels the most ominous about this entire thing to me. These are two diametrically opposed political forces, political parties with constituencies that are ideologically opposed on pretty much every single issue. These politicians run campaigns that are ideologically opposed on pretty much every single issue. They at least publicly present themselves to be people who believe in very different things and have very different strategies when it comes to governance. And they don't vote in lockstep with each other on pretty much anything, the Democrats and the Republicans. And it's so rare to see the kind of bipartisan support that this TikTok ban got when it first passed as a law several months ago. And that made me think, uh-oh, we're in trouble. Something about this just doesn't feel right. Something about this feels different in a weird kind of unprecedented and ominous sort of way. And yeah, here we are. It's actually happening. You know, they said January 19th, and I think a lot of us that are creators on the app thought that we would at least have till the 19th. I think we assumed that the 19th would be the final day, and then the app would go dark on the 20th. And here we are on the evening of the 18th, and it's already over. So I hope that if you are a creator on the app, that you were able to get your videos off of the app before it went dark. I had just finished downloading all of my videos. It took me 2 days, and I downloaded hundreds of videos and organized them into different folders according to the different genres of videos that they were, and spent the last two days doing that. And I literally finished downloading my very last video like 30 minutes before the app went dark. One thing I wasn't able to get is screenshots of my analytics and statistics. So that's something I kind of wish I had gotten to, but I was able to get all of the videos that I wanted to get. And at least I was able to get that. Now, you know, Donald Trump has been talking about how he might step in and do something and extend the app for 90 days once he is inaugurated on Monday the 20th. From where I sit, that's in the future. And from the conversation that Francesca and I had that you're about to watch, that's in the future, but that doesn't stop us from speculating on what that might look like. We do speculate on that. We speculate on what the Trump-era version of TikTok might look like. Will it be owned by Meta? Will it be operated and overseen by the same people that Elon Musk works with at X? And will it become some kind of conservative hellscape? I guess only time will tell, but it's a strange new world from where I'm sitting right now, and everything is up in the air. I have no conclusions to report other than that right now, TikTok is dark in the United States, and that's what we're talking about on the show today. We're talking about what it's like to be a full-time content creator, everything that goes into it. We're talking about what the future for content creators is going to look like, what the future of the creator economy could look like. We're speculating on what moves could happen next, and all of that is coming up on the show. Let's get into it. Here we go. From a Blankenfort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today my guest, Francesca Ramsey, and I are talking about the TikTok ban. Okay. Francesca.
Yay.
Oh my God. I guess first things first, we're right in the throes of it. It's, as we're recording this, it's Saturday, January 18th, and nobody really knows what's going to happen in the next couple days.
Yeah.
But let's start at the very beginning. Like, you've been doing this for a minute. You've been in the social media game and been a personality publicly for a minute. How'd you get into doing all this kind of stuff?
Yeah. The most Cliff Notes version is I went to acting school. I went to performing arts middle and high school. Then I went to college for acting. I left acting school and studied graphic design. And while I was in graphic design school, YouTube launched. And I had always been an internet kid. I went to computer camp in middle school. I had a website through middle school and high school. I was on LiveJournal. I was on Friendster. I was on MySpace. And so YouTube felt like a very natural transition for me. So I joined in 2006 and I had my first big viral video in 2012, Shit White Girls Say to Black Girls. I quit my job off the strength of that video. I got signed to a film and TV agent and never went back to a desk job, to a 9-to-5. And since then, I've bounced around between internet and television. But most recently, I've been leaning on the internet because, you know, Hollywood is in a state of turmoil, as you and I have talked about many times. So I'm very thankful for that.
2012, the first hit, you leave the world of 9-to-5s and get to embark on this journey and all the ups and downs of that. 13 years is a nice run. That's really respectable.
If we're going to keep it a buck, it's almost 20 years because I started in 2006. I was making content before that. But, you know, something you and I kind of like bonded over talking on Threads is like, this work takes years. And a lot of people are so quick to be like, well, I've been making videos for a year and it hasn't worked out. It's like, okay, do it for five more and then you let me know, because there's no such thing as an overnight sensation in any field. But I think social media has tricked a lot of people into thinking that it just happens for people, and sometimes it does.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's a lot of hard work, persistence, and luck.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one thing about everyone right now kind of saying, oh, well, just come over to Red Note, or just come over to Blue Sky, or come over to Clapper, or come over to whatever that is. They seem to think that we can just start a new channel from zero and have the exact same level of success that we've had on these other channels immediately. And some people might be able to. Some people might be able to transfer over and overnight have 100,000 followers on a brand new channel. And I don't know. That's never really been my experience. And trying to get people to understand that it's like the audience that I have on these various different platforms, I've been building for years. It's years of consistent, patient, often monotonous, often fruitless labor where you're like...
Free labor. Yeah. I would also add the thing that I think a lot of people don't recognize is that audiences are burnt out on social media. There's too many places, in the same way that there's too many places to watch shows. There's so many streaming platforms. People want to stick with what they already know.
Right.
So, okay, there's a new platform over here. Trying to convince your audience, download this new app, create a new username and password, and then put this into your daily routine after you've been on Instagram for 10 years, after you've been on Facebook for 15 years. A lot of people are like, I'll wait and see if it pops off, and then I need to join. The same way you don't watch a TV show or a movie until enough people have talked to you about it. And you're like, you know what? That sounds interesting. Maybe I will check it out.
That's actually how apps become the... I mean, TikTok was around in the United States for a couple years before...
2016 is when the app
started. Yeah, that's crazy. And it didn't really have its big boom till 2020.
Exactly.
And so when people are going, oh, we found this new thing, and it's like, well, we'll see, because... As far as I'm concerned, when I go to Blue Sky right now, I'm like, this is not a real place yet.
No.
This is not a real thing. There's a very niche group of people here using this thing, and it doesn't feel like a real place on the internet where there's lots of different perspectives and lots of different kinds of content coming in. It's just kind of one, it's just sort of a, like a sort of a liberal haven to us, you know?
Yeah. It's that, but it's also just a Twitter knockoff right now.
Right.
And so, you know, there's something to be said for like figuring out what works and creating your own thing. But ultimately you have to figure out what is your unique draw to your platform. What sets you apart? Why do creators want to be there over other apps? And for me, if I can do the same thing there as somewhere else, I'm going to stay where my audience is at because that's going to be more beneficial to me. And what's baffling to me is every time I say that, people call me every name in the book. And I'm like, I got to pay my bills. So you can be mad if you want, but I'm going to stay over here.
Right. It's been really interesting how people have been mad at me in the last week or so. And I think people are just upset. I think people are frustrated at the government, and rightly so. It's the reason why we're talking today, this ban of TikTok that we're sort of staring down the barrel of, that we don't actually know what's going to happen in the next couple of days, because the news seems to change every single day. There always seems to be some, you know, last ditch new development. But I think the audiences are generally upset, and justifiably upset, that their favorite platform is being taken away. And so everyone's sort of scattering. And if you're not willing to go to the same place they want to go, they're like, well, then screw you. Like, well, then forget, you know. And
which is totally their right. I mean, for me, it's a lot of misplaced anger because I am not the reason that TikTok is being banned. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've seen, you and I talked about the Red Note of it all. A lot of people saying, well, why aren't you going to Red Note? And when I explain why, they get upset. Well, don't ask me and then get angry that the answer is not what you want to hear. Mm. I do not think that is a worthy use of my time. And I am the arbiter of where I put my time and energy. And I think what's been difficult for a number of people who watch my content, who, you know, maybe you've watched my content for years, the realization that while I do have fun doing this, this is also a job. And so I'm not just going to go to Red Note because y'all are kikiing over there. I can't give Red Note hours of my time when it's more a better use of my time to make content somewhere I'm being paid. And again, it's just very bizarre. And I think a lot of things are at play. You're right about people feeling, you know, disillusioned and disappointed and frustrated, and, you know, the Trump presidency right around the corner. All of those things are valid. But I think there's also this underlying feeling of, well, what you do is easy. And so for you to say that it's work, or for you to say that this isn't worth your time or investment, how dare you? All you just do is make videos on the internet. And it's like, no, baby, I am a comedy writer. I know how to keep your attention. I've kept you around for 10, 15 years. Not everybody can do that. That takes talent. And if you don't think it does, fine. Go somewhere else. I will be fine. I have audiences elsewhere. Again, I'm so thankful that I have this platform. It's not my main check. I will figure it out regardless.
So I guess that was going to be my next question, and you sort of have already gotten into it. In working on making content and trying to build channels since 2006, in that time, you've seen a lot of change in the social media landscape. You've seen the rise and fall of Vine. You've seen the rise and potential fall of TikTok. You've seen all of the different changes that have happened to YouTube over the years, all of the different format changes and policy changes that have happened at Meta over the years, the name change from Facebook to Meta, the acquisition of Instagram, all of these different things. How are you faring right now, just personally on an emotional level? Because for me, I didn't get an audience till 2020, and I've only been doing this full time for the last 5 years. And for me, this is kind of devastating because my biggest channel is TikTok, and I haven't been able to build up my foothold elsewhere. And it really feels like everything's going away. overnight, but I don't, do you feel any of that at this point, or do you just kind of go like another day, another new development?
I feel a little bit of both. I definitely feel sad. I really enjoy TikTok and not just the financial part of it. Like I really enjoy watching other people's content. I'm so inspired by the things that I watch there. I cook every single day now because of things I see on TikTok. I'm always trying different things. And also just the implications for our nation. What does this mean if our government can come together to ban an app, but not to come together, you know, to take care of climate change as LA is on fire? Like that bothers me. Or to not put a stop to the price gouging of apartments when, you know, a natural disaster happens. Like that is upsetting to me, almost more so than the fact that I'm going to lose the app. But to your point about, you know, this is the place that you've grown and you've been able to build an audience there, your feelings are totally valid. The thing that I tried to impart to you, like when we first talked about this, was TikTok helped you, but TikTok was not the thing that made you. You and your voice and your point of view and your work ethic is what made you. TikTok was just the vessel to help you get there. And so you can continue to do that elsewhere. You're just going to have to kind of reformat and reconfigure how that works for you. And the thing that I continue to stress to creators that has been a lesson for me is you have to diversify. Mm-hmm. And I learned that accidentally because when Shit White Girls Say to Black Girls went viral, I quit my job. I made $45,000 off that video. And I was like, yo, I'm fucking making it. So I quit my job. Mm-hmm. And I really struggled to find my groove. Like I was just trying different things and nothing was hitting the same way. And I blew through that money in about a year. I mean, 45 grand is great, but in New York, that's not a ton of money to live off. You still got to pay taxes on that, you know? And so it really ended up being a blessing for me because it taught me to figure other things out. So I started doing a lot of public speaking, for example. I was auditioning. I did some consulting. I consulted for WNYC and NPR and Totally Biased with Kamau Bell. I started doing all these little extra projects in addition to making YouTube videos. So while that was some income, I was making money elsewhere. And I really started focusing on trying to move into TV. And so, now I'm looking at this time. I saw the writing on the wall and I hadn't really been active on YouTube for about 5 years. And so I crunched some numbers and I said, well, my RPM is higher on YouTube than it is on TikTok. So I can make less views per month on YouTube and make comparable money versus trying to make one video every single day on TikTok and hope it hits. I can make 4 videos a month on YouTube and I only need like 2 or 3 of them to hit. So I started, you know, working on trying to build back my YouTube channel about 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And it's working. So for me, I was like, I'm sad about TikTok going away, but I already have my strategy and I sold a show at the end of last year. So I'm hoping that goes.
Hell yeah.
I just applied for a fellowship program that I just got called back to, and that would give me some money if I get it. So like I always have like multiple plates in the air. And that is one of the reasons why when creators get offended when I say that, I come from the standpoint of like, I'm not shitting on you. I'm telling you this is what I've done. Mm-hmm. And I learned this lesson because when I quit my job 12, 13 years ago, I blew through that money and I realized I got to pay these bills. So yep. That's if anyone is feeling, you know, worried about the future, those feelings are valid. I would just encourage you to like not wallow because it's not going to help you. You got to start trying to figure it out and explore your options now.
That's really good advice. And yeah, I think that's the only thing you can do, right? When things fall apart is like, you got to keep moving. You got to keep working.
Yeah.
So we'll get into this too. There's obviously, like we said, there's new developments in this story about the ban seemingly every single day. For a minute there, there was one senator who was introducing the, delay the TikTok ban Plan.
Yes.
Bill that did not pass Congress. There were several politicians who all of a sudden seemed to have like buyer's remorse over this bill.
Oh, Cory Booker.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and the Biden administration was even saying that they wanted to do something for a second. They were, you know, and it seemed like there was a new story every single day. And now the new story is that Trump is now saying that, you know, after his inauguration on Monday, he'll announce something that that allows TikTok to go on another 90 days or something.
It seems probable. Xu thanked him in his video about the Supreme Court decision. So
yeah, everything that Xu's been posting, Xu, the Singaporean CEO of TikTok, has been posting is not. It's sort of pointing in that direction, mm-hmm. and I do want to talk about that. But before we speculate on what that could all portend and what that could all mean, let's assume that the app is dark Sunday or Monday. Mm-hmm. I don't know which day it's supposed to go dark, but let's assume that the 170 million Americans that use TikTok daily open up their apps tomorrow or Monday and the app is no longer, it's just dark. It's no longer available. It's shut down. What are some ideas that you think are like the next move in the social media landscape? Do you think that there's a big resurgence of like TikTok compilations on YouTube, the same way that Vine compilations were popping off after the, like, what do you think the next big thing, is it Red Note? Is it Clapper? Is it, you know?
I definitely think there'll be TikTok compilations. They already exist on there, sure. But I'm sure people will be posting more of those. Personally, I don't think Red Note is the move, especially considering it is a Chinese app. So like if they're banning TikTok for foreign interference, Red Note is no doubt, you know, quickly behind it. For me, I'm really investing in my YouTube channel. I have seen people saying that they are going to fan base, which I'm not really interested in going there. My main issue has been that it has not felt compelling enough to me. Like I have to see a return on investment. And so far I've just seen people saying, well, it's Black owned, so you should go there. And to me, that's not enough. Mm. People are mad that I said it, but that's just how I feel. I know people are on Spill. I have an account there. I don't get it. It doesn't do anything for me. Similarly with Blue Sky. Again, like my interest is where my audience is and being able to make money. So I'm continuing to post on Threads. I got the bonus there. I really don't use my Facebook, but my audience is there. And my audience is on Instagram. And for me, Instagram is less about, you know, growing my brand, but the connections that I make there, like it's kind of like a portfolio. Like you meet people at a party and they're like, what's your Instagram? You know,
honestly, as big as TikTok is, as big as solid as YouTube has been for the last 20 years, as big as TikTok has been in the social media landscape, when you meet someone at a party,
they ask for your Instagram.
They don't even ask for your number. They say, what's your Instagram? And so yeah, that can't be denied.
That
it's like the way that you exchange information is.
And that's not to say that some other app might not come up. You know, I think there is a huge opportunity for somebody to fill that void if we are in fact losing TikTok. I will say I've gone back to Tumblr recently and Tumblr is popping because I've got like 75,000 followers over on Tumblr. And while I don't make money there, my videos always did well over on Tumblr. And so I was like, I should just go. I still have it and I know people are still using it. This is an easy place to share some content. And if people watch it, it's a win for me.
Yeah.
And the audience there is like really engaged and they're really passionate. There's so many different, like fandoms there and little like social justice pockets, but also like beauty people, but also like cosplayers. Like there's so many factions on Tumblr that
are there men on Tumblr?
Yes, there are men on Tumblr.
Like, that's my only thing about Tumblr is I'm like, am I allowed on Tumblr?
Yes. You know what? I'm not one to give cookies, but I will give you one. Thank you for respecting the space. Yes, there are definitely men on Tumblr. You know what I like about Tumblr? So yeah. I got on Tumblr when I was in college. I think it was before I started making YouTube videos. And similarly to how I got on these other apps, my friends were on Tumblr, and that's how I got on there. And I liked how easy it was in terms of a blogging platform because, you know, back in my day, you had to know some HTML. You don't have to know HTML on Tumblr. It's like plug and play. There's a button for video. There's a button for photos. There's a button for links. There's a button for GIFs, and you just click it and drag and drop whatever you want. And people are super active there, and yeah, when I started making videos, when Shit White Girl Say went viral, Tumblr was a big part of why it went viral. People were sharing it there. So I'm excited to go back. I posted some stuff yesterday and I had so many people that were like, I'm so glad I didn't stop following you. I knew you would come back to us. I felt like the prodigal son, you know, like, yes, I've returned.
I feel like Tumblr is one of those places on the internet that has staying power because it stayed relatively small. Like it's got a big user base, but it's sort of in that same tier as like Reddit or Imgur or like these places where it's like there will always be people there and mods who are keeping this place up, and there will be an active user base that is like, I have friends that all they use is Reddit, and when one of my videos shows up on the front page of Reddit, to them that's like I've made it. Like and they always text me, they're like, you're on the front page of Reddit today. You know, but like,
I love that.
And it's like, you don't make any money on Reddit, but it's always like to a certain subset of the internet,
it makes you relevant.
If you can pop off on their thing, then you've made it out of the realm of whatever place you're, you know.
Yeah. I think it's also like figuring out what your thing is in terms of a platform and sticking to the thing. Like Tumblr didn't try to become Instagram. And I would say that's kind of one of Meta's big problems is they're not innovators. They are just like, you know, Snapchat's popping off, so now we're going to do stories. TikTok's popping off, so now we're going to do reels. You know, they're trying to do what everyone else is doing. Reddit has always been a text first forum. That's what it is. It's not trying to be short form video. It's not trying to be a messaging app. It's not any of those things. Tumblr has always been a plug-and-play blogging app where one of its main features is you can reblog from other people. So you can share what somebody else has posted, and it becomes a piece of living content on your platform that you can comment on. It's a very cool feature that other people don't have. I mean, you can retweet or, you know, quote or thread or whatever. I think they don't know what it's called yet, I guess. But you know, and that's, again, when people keep bringing up fan base, and it's only top of mind because I just made a video about this, but like fan base is just an Instagram knockoff. It's just it's just Instagram, and I don't need another place to post photos. And I would say Instagram moving to video really hurt the platform because Instagram was a place for photographers and artists to share their work. And now so many people are like, no one sees my stuff because they want everything to be a video. Not everybody wants to make videos. So, you know, I actually really enjoy Reddit. I was always like kind of scared of it, kind of like how you mentioned with Tumblr. I was like, are women over there? I feel like it's angry gamers.
Exactly.
But there's, no matter what community you're in or what you're interested in, there is a subreddit for you. And that's what I love about it. And and for me, I love that the front page, kind of similar to Tumblr, is a mix. It's not all politics. It's not all thirst traps. It's like there's a community called power washing porn where it's just people like washing their driveway.
Yeah.
That's the whole. And sometimes it'll be on the front page and I'll watch the fuck out of it. I'm just like, this is so cool. What's the driveway going to look like when it's done? You know? But then it's like cute animals. But then it's also politics. But then it's, am I the asshole? Then it's, you know, divorce say it's like a mix of everything. And I love that.
That I guess that's one thing that I'm seeing a lot of from audiences as the TikTok ban is going on, is that like there are a lot of people out there who have one place on the internet that they like, and that's it. And they, the amount of people that are just like, I've tried YouTube, I can't get into it. I've tried Instagram, I can't get into it. I've tried, you know, and I've just always been a person kind of like you, who I like all these different places for the different things that they offer. Yeah. I'm on the text only platforms. I like the difference between, I like how unhinged Instagram Reels is versus my FYP on TikTok. I like the difference. Yeah. I like that. I even go and watch Facebook Reels sometimes because they give me different things over there. And then I like what I get on Reddit. I like the different experiences, but I guess there are some people who are like, I found that I like the TikTok experience and that's all I like. And if they're going to take that away, then I'm done. I'm out.
Oh, 1000%. I have had so many people say, you know, where are you going to be? Where are you going to be? And then I list all the places and they're like, man, I don't like any of those places.
Right.
Okay. Well, then I guess I'm never going to see you again. And that sucks. But for me, I'm like, you know, whatever, do what you're going to do. One thing I will never do is browbeat my audience. I'm never going to be like, you have to buy this. You have to follow me here. You have to do da 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 da. To me, that's a sign of your product's not great. You're not going to shame me into watching, buying, sharing. Even, you know, the old school, like, share, and subscribe, that doesn't work. People will do it if they like what you have to say. And so, you know, it sounds like you and I are very similar in that, like, we're just kids of the internet. Like, we just like being on the internet. And some people are more so creatures of habit. I mean, you know, and the number one show right now is fucking Matlock. Did you know that? People are watching the hell out of Matlock. They're not watching the Game of Thrones prequel. They're not watching any of this new shit. They're like, oh yeah, I love the format. There's a crime every week.
Yeah.
Gotta solve it. Good to go. CSI Miami. I need 30 different CSIs. There's 482 Law and Orders, Criminal Intent, Criminal Minds, Dark Waters, you know, Bridges of Terabithida. There's a, you know, and people are like, that's what I want to do.
Yep.
I don't begrudge people that are interested in hopping on every new thing.
Yeah. I think I totally agree. I'm interested in this thing that you said about fan base.
Yes.
That people were kind of going, oh, well, you should get on it because it's Black owned, and almost saying like, it doesn't really matter if it's good for business or not.
Right.
You should do it as a symbolic gesture, some kind of community activism.
Yes.
A lot of people are moving to Red Note or other platforms as a form of protest. It has nothing to do with keeping the community alive or helping keep your small business as a content creator alive. It has to do with just like, this is our way of saying fuck you to the.
And that's a joke. And it's the memes. It's the meme of it all. It's like, oh, you're banning this because of foreign interference? I'm going to go straight to the source and I'm going to learn Mandarin. Like, a lot of people are just doing it for jokes.
Absolutely. And so I'm curious about how you have navigated, because as a person who you do sociopolitical advocacy and social advocacy in your content, you talk about social issues that you care about and things that you think are important to care about. You do things where you're hoping to educate or help or add catharsis to a particular topic that's very politically charged or culturally charged. And then people look at you as an activist and as an important voice in the community. And when the community is rallying behind a protest and we don't get on board with their protest, they see it as a betrayal. Especially, like, I've been getting this a lot lately. People are like, oh, so you just care about you. You just care about your bottom line and your business.
Yes.
You never, and I'm like, well, it's, I look, obviously I care about using my platform for the most good that I can use it for and trying to advocate for things that I think are important to advocate for. But I also believe that in order for me to be able to do that effectively, I need to have a platform. I need to be able to, like, I need to have a thriving business. I need to be able to support myself monetarily. I need to be able to pay my rent. I need to, you know, if I can't keep the lights on, then I can't do the work. And
yeah,
and
I hate that argument. Yeah. I mean, so that is something that's come up for me a lot in my career. I actually, my book subtitle is Memoir. My book is Well, That Escalated Quickly. And the subtitle is Memoirs and Mistakes of an Accidental Activist. Because the reality is I never said, hey, I'm an activist. I've always been a comedian that just happens to be a Black woman that talks about my experiences as a Black woman. And so I have really wrestled with through the course of my career being put on this pedestal as you are our voice. You are the person that's supposed to speak on this. And I find myself often reminding people, I have a degree in graphic design. I did not go to law school. I did not study political science. I don't have, there's so many things I don't know. And so when I speak on something, I'm usually coming from the perspective of not only is this something that's important to me, but I feel like I have something worthwhile to add to this conversation that I haven't heard anybody else say. Otherwise, I'm good to be quiet and uplift somebody else's voice. Doesn't mean that I don't think it's important, but I'm of the mind of like, speak up, not over. You don't need me muddying up the waters to say something that's incorrect or is silencing the people who are actually affected by this issue. And so when people say to me, well, you haven't spoken on XYZ, you don't care, I push back to say, by that logic, you don't care because you're using your time and energy to tell me what I should be talking about instead of talking about it. So if you think that that's true, then I can list a whole thing of a whole litany of topics that I've yet to see you speak on. Doesn't mean that you don't care about those things. We have a limited amount of time and energy for the things that are really important to us, to the things that upset us, to the things that break our hearts, to the things that activate us. I can't speak on every single thing. I'm also not the Associated Press. And so for me, I've really made a conscientious effort in recent years to diversify my content so that I'm not just speaking on social issues. It's tiring. It's draining. You know, I remember there was a week where there was like five different police shootings that week. And every day somebody was like, are you going to speak on this thing? And I said, look, I can't watch another video of a Black person being murdered. I don't have the energy for that. It's heartbreaking to me. It doesn't mean that I don't think it's important, but I believe, especially as a Black woman, especially as a queer Black woman, that joy is a form of resistance too. Creating content that just makes people laugh is important and necessary. And so the thing I always tell my audience, my detractors, is you don't have to like what I'm doing. That is okay. You can put your time and energy elsewhere. But at the end of the day, y'all don't run the show. Either you want to watch or you don't. And if you don't, I'm okay with that. And sometimes I'm not going to make stuff that you vibe with. And that's just the way of the world.
Oh my God. That was church for me. That was like everything I've ever wanted to say about that. Because I can't tell you everything.
Oh, I know. Austin, I see it happening to you. That's why I was like, let me reach out and touch Austin's hand and say, it's okay.
Oh, my God. I just like, I haven't, like, I went to school for musical theater, you know, like the exact same thing. I'm like, I'm like a goofball. Like,
yeah.
Like most of the time I'm just trying to make people laugh and like, I like writing songs and I like, you know, and I just happened to like, as soon as there were 100,000 people following me and it was 2020 and COVID was happening and the election was going on and the MAGA people were just the craziest that they'd ever been. And I was like, if there's people here watching and there's an issue that I see a way into that I'm not seeing someone like exactly what you said.
Right.
Like, yeah, I like everyone's talking about this one thing and I don't see anybody hitting the argument just right or pointing out this very obvious thing about the argument or this very obvious way to dismantle that problem. And it's like, okay, then I will. If there's people here, there's people watching, But if I see something that's been covered, that it's, I just am like, it's been covered. And I think it's been covered well. And it's exactly what you said.
Well, the thing is that's the rarity, especially on TikTok. You know, one of my biggest pet peeves about TikTok, and again, I don't want it to be banned, but if it's gone, I will be glad to never encounter this anymore, where somebody's like, so everybody's talking about this and I don't really know that much about it, but I'm going to weigh in. Well, I don't want to hear what you have to say then. You know, or everybody's asking me. Nobody is asking you. No one is asking you to talk about this thing. You're lying. You're trying to ride the wave. And when you say, in our instance, to your audience, I just don't think I have anything to say about that, people are baffled by it because they're so used to other people making their whole content about what everybody else is talking about. And I maintain that that is very low-hanging fruit. It doesn't mean that it's not worth talking about, but if you're only talking about it because everybody else is talking about it, I would say your voice is not needed. You could literally just share what somebody else is saying.
It sort of makes me think of like when everybody pressured Chapel Roan into endorsing somebody in the election. And I totally agreed with her coming out and saying, I don't think you guys should be looking at me for advice on who to vote for. That's not who I am. That's not what I do. But if you need me to say something. And then she said a bunch of shit that I thought was kind of ignorant and not very helpful. But I was like, I don't, like, we pushed her into that situation. And I don't think that that's what Chapel Roan is here to do. She's like, and she's even saying, like, I mean, I thought that she said some stuff that I was like, yeah, I get that. But, right.
And yeah. I think to your point, and I think like the underlying subtext of this conversation is a lot of people are putting their energy, they're upset about an issue, which is totally valid, and they're misdirecting the energy at influencers and celebrities. And it's like, yes, we can amplify things that are important, but ultimately it is not my decision. You know, I've seen this happen with, you know, everything with the ceasefire of it all. And I saw so many people saying to me, oh, well, you're going to vote for this person. You are endorsing this thing. And I'm like, actually, I'm not, because I don't have the power to end a genocide that's been happening for 30 plus years. I want it to end. I absolutely am here for a free Palestine. I do not have the personal power to make the person running for president call for a ceasefire. And you have every right to be angry about it, but you are misdirecting that anger at me, somebody that has 200,000 followers on Instagram and does not have the ability to make enact the change that you want. And it's hard for people, I think, to conceptualize that many things can be true, that Chapel Roan can say, hey, I don't really feel like I'm the right person for this. And she could also say some stuff that I don't necessarily agree with. And I think people on the internet, they want everything, or a lot of people want things to be black and white. This person is bad. This person is good. This is important. This is not. And unfortunately, there's more of like shades of gray. And I think for me, I would rather not weigh in on certain things unless I have an opportunity like a long form conversation where we can explore some of those nuances versus how do I condense this into a 1 minute video? How do I condense this into, you know, 500 characters for Threads? I mean, that's just not, sometimes you need to write an essay versus a 30 second video, you know?
I've made several videos now on the situation in Gaza and the genocide over there. But I mean, it took me like 4 weeks after October 7th happened in 2023 to come up with my first video. Mm-hmm. And it was like an hour long video essay. And in those 4 weeks, my DMs were just full of people every single day going, where are you? Where are you? Why are you being so silent? Why are you being so quiet? And I was like, give me a second. And one thing I talked about in my first video was that I said, let me first just say, I unequivocally stated my stance. I said, I think that what Israel is doing and has been doing for decades is tantamount to ethnic cleansing and genocide. I think that's very clear. I think that there's plenty of evidence to suggest that. But also let me say, I am just not the authority on this topic. Yeah. This is a thing that has been happening my entire life. Every single person that I know, it's been happening every single day of our lives. And it's been sort of unilaterally considered as
just And there's been, sorry to cut you off. And there has been a concerted effort to misrepresent what is happening and muddy the waters so much so that a lot of us did not understand the issue until we had TikTok to see the videos up close.
Right.
You know, and so for me, I was really frustrated by how many people were saying to me, you didn't know about this. And I'm like, no, guess what I didn't learn about in school? I did not learn about this in school. Guess what? Our mainstream media is incredibly biased against Palestine. So where was I supposed to have learned this? Ignorance does not mean that you are absolved from any hurtful things you might say or do, but we don't know what we don't know. And so it turns into this, you're supposed to have done this. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. Now that I'm here, I'm willing to do the work. Again, that's where I'm like, I would rather uplift some more knowledgeable voices, because I can't tell you all the names and the dates and you know, the people and all of those like little details. I don't have all that information, and I would rather not speak on it and get it wrong versus share something from somebody else and say, well, you know, this is a trustworthy news source. This is Al Jazeera. This is Ta-Nehisi Coates. This is whoever it might be.
And I think that a lot of people's response to what you just said would be, well, it's your, whether you want it or not, it's your responsibility as a person with a platform and an audience to do that work and to learn that. And I would just say back to, like, I think that's the response, is people are like, well, I don't care. Like, that sounds like laziness. Like, you need to just take on, you were given the platform, whether you understood what that responsibility meant or not. And now you have to do that labor and figure it out. But here's the thing is, like, no, even if, and I don't think that either one of us would define ourselves as professional political activists. I think we both prefer actor, writer, entertainer, comedian, whatever. That's at least I know I do. And I feel like that's how you self-identify too.
Yeah.
And, but no political activist, no public voice with a platform can be the authority on every single issue of social injustice across the entire world. No person can be the container for all of that information. So, like, there are people who their specialty is focusing on that region of the world and the history of what has happened there. There are people who their specialty is focusing on the civil rights struggle in the United States through the 20th century and beyond. And there are people whose specialty is focusing on queer rights and queer representation, and like, and no one platform can be the authority voice on every single issue.
Right. And that's why you watch the news. That's what a news outlet is supposed to do. And to your, you know, hypothetical of people saying, well, this, you have a platform and this is what you're supposed to do. Cause I've definitely encountered that before. Mm-hmm. The thing that I have had to really become comfortable saying, and I will say to you, and I will say to your listeners, is it is okay for us to disagree on this. And sometimes I just have to say that to people, like, this is what you think about what I should be doing. And I think I should be doing something different. And we don't see eye to eye on that. And that is okay. One, because we are strangers. And two, because I am not the only person available to cover this subject, to carry this torch, to illuminate this issue, to educate the masses. And also, a big part of what I've been doing in recent years is I have been moving away from educational content for this very reason. This is not what I set out to do. I have always wanted to be an actress, a writer, a performer. I've done it for a really long time. I know that I'm good at explaining things. I know that I'm good at finding humorous ways into important subjects. It's not the only thing I can do. It's not the only thing I want to do. And if someone feels let down by the fact that I'm no longer talking about certain things that are important to them, I can understand and respect that, and I will honor the fact that they might need to give their time and energy to someone else. because I cannot satisfy every single person. It's just not possible.
Again, church therapy. Thank you. And this is everything I need to hear right now. Let's move into the realm of wild speculation. Let's just move into the realm of just absolute worst case scenario speculation. As we mentioned earlier, there have been just in the last 24 hours, some kind of cryptic revelations of, you know, Xu, the TikTok CEO, canoodling with and sidling up with people in the Trump cabinet and in the Trump
resharing world. Content from Charlie Kirk on TikTok.
and Trump saying, yeah, I'm probably going to do something about TikTok. And it's starting to make it look like, oh, could this have all been from the beginning a power play by the incoming Trump administration and the Republican and the Conservative Party to say, this is how we're going to get control of all social media in the United States. And like, if that's the case, if Trump saves TikTok on Monday, what does that mean for the future of is TikTok safe in the hands of, like, let's say
that
the plan is to have TikTok be acquired or partnered with Meta and Meta is under the umbrella of the Trump administration and the Trump and Elon world. Is social media cooked? Are we done?
I don't know. I don't know. Like it does feel like there's some collusion going on, because I don't know if you saw people sharing on Facebook, there's now an option to add your TikTok, like include your TikTok link. And so many people were like, this has never been here before. Why is this here days ahead of the TikTok being banned, unless there's some backdoor dealings going on where Meta is about to acquire TikTok? I predict if Trump saves TikTok and gets one of his, you know, billionaire cronies to buy it, I suspect there'll be a mass exodus, the same way a lot of people left Twitter, you know, X as the kids are calling it. Mm-hmm. I left Twitter when Elon bought it, but it was a bunch of things. Like, the Elon of it all was bothersome to me, but like, the ecosystem changed so drastically when he took over, and Twitter had been very hostile for me for a long time. But then, like, once the verification was gone, and once, you know, people were being promoted for saying hateful shit all the time to me, I was like, this is not a good use of my time. So I was happy to quit. You know, I'll be sad if I have to quit TikTok, because if the ecosystem changes and it becomes actively hostile towards me, if it becomes an agent of rampant misinformation and, you know, blatant glazing of Donald Trump, like, I don't want to freaking be there. You know, I will be sad about my community, my extra income. But again, I've already created a strategy for myself. And I got to be totally honest, I'm actually looking forward to not making videos every day. I was just like, I was really getting burnt out on like trying to like figure out like what's going to work with the algorithm and da 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 da. Like, even though making YouTube videos takes way more time, I'd rather put 1 week into making one really good piece of content that comes from my brain. I'm not trying to chase what everybody's talking about. I'm just like, here's something I wanted to talk about. I've been trying to get off social media for like 6 years. I'm really trying to like work full time in film and TV. I don't know what that looks like as Hollywood is still recovering from the pandemic and the strikes and now the fires. I don't know, but I'm trying to figure that out. And so like, if this is the thing that gets me off of TikTok, I got 5 good years out of it. I made some good money. I'm fine going back to YouTube, but I do think that Trump is going to use this to bolster his approval rating, and I 1000% believe that Elon Musk, when Elon purchased Twitter, I said this is to influence our election. Facebook played a role in the 2016 election. Twitter played a role in the 2024 election. And I fully believe that they want TikTok so that they can use it to, you know, line their pockets and set them up for success in 2028. I believe that.
I agree with you. And so my next question is, can we strategically afford to just let them have it? So yeah. What happened with Twitter, and I did the same thing. It's like you said, Elon completely ruined the platform. The platform already was, it was already like, no, everybody made fun of Twitter. Everybody made fun of like what a cesspool it could be.
I'm going to push back only because Black Twitter was fucking lit.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
We were making the funniest jokes and the memes and the trends. And like, I have so many good friends that I met from Twitter.
Yeah.
Like on the day, like there were days when I would like be on Twitter crying, laughing so hard. And to this day, when you go on Reddit, it's a lot of tweets. When you go on Instagram, it's a lot of screenshots of tweets.
And it's old tweets. It's like, it's like 2018, mm-hmm. 2017. Like, it's like,
listen, my Leopard song, the biggest thing I've had in recent years is inspired by a 2015 tweet. Mm-hmm. I mean, those tweets have stood the test of time. And even on TikTok, a lot of people making content where they're just reading other people's tweets. Some of the funniest people are on that platform.
Yeah.
And I miss that version of it.
Yeah. And he turned it into something that is it. You like, you go on it and you feel like you're inside of a guy who owns a Cybertruck's house. Like it just has terrible vibes.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of unusable. And so a lot of, I mean, there are leftist and liberal creators who have stayed and like who have staked their claim on that platform and have been like, we're staying and fighting, we're going down with the ship. And a lot of people have stayed, but a lot of the audience and left-leaning audience has abandoned X and just let them have it. And I think the result of that is, and this could go either way. You could say, well, let them have their echo chamber and X basically becomes Truth Social. It becomes irrelevant. It becomes a place where no real discourse is taking place. Or it becomes a very fertile propaganda machine for them where they're able to convert, you know, young men in droves, particularly young white men in droves to their cause. And we have no way to fight over there. Is letting the same thing happen to TikTok, can we afford to do that? Can we allow them to just like have it? Or do we have to stay and try to resist?
That's a good question.
You know?
I mean, I think everyone has to make that decision for themselves. And, you know, I am curious to see if this happens, what TikTok actually looks like, because it's my understanding that the algorithm was not for sale and that if they were to sell the platform to an American company, the algorithm would not go with it. And I think the algorithm is the key component that's missing from it turning into, you know, this tool for radicalization of, you know, the alt-right pipeline. That's not to say that it can't happen, but, you know, if for me, it'll be a matter of who actually ends up owning it, how the platform changes, and how my personal user experience changes. And audience, there's somebody out there who's going, it's just about you. Yeah, mama, it's just about me. This is the era we are in. I've been on this earth 41 years. And what I'm not about to do is stay someplace where people are calling me the N-word over and over and over again and making money from it. I will take my ball and go fucking home. So I think, you know, online community is important, but the thing I am personally excited about, I started as a stand-up and I stopped doing stand-up because I like going to bed and I couldn't do the late nights in New York. I was living in Queens and, you know, the thought of being in Harlem at 11 o'clock at night and having a 1-hour train ride back to Queens was not appealing to me. So I stopped doing stand-up and I'm really excited about going back to it. I miss live performance. I miss being able to see the faces of the people who are engaging with my work. And so if these online platforms become so unusable, I think we're just going to have to develop new ways to engage. My friend Kamau Bell has a monthly Zoom with all of his highest tiered members on his Substack. And there's like 200 people in there. And he had me come speak and it was really wonderful. And it was really encouraging, and the audience was really diverse and they were really engaged. And I was like, yo, we need more of this. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to be someplace where there are folks that are just shitting on what I'm doing and trying to stir up drama. And I think what's happened on True Social is a great example. True Social sucks because they don't have any liberal folks to bother. So like, they get bored when we're not there. So I think if we let it go, yes, it will be sad. But what we need to do is find our own communities and build those up and invest in those. Sometimes it's going to be offline. Sometimes it's going to be going back to Tumblr, going back to YouTube. Or if it's fan base, investing the time and energy into making that a new awesome space for, you know, progressive ideas and progressive creators. I don't know where that place is, but, you know, we'll figure it out the same way we've done in the past.
That's where I need to stay. I want to stay in gratitude for what I've been able to have and build over the last 5 years, and also just like excitement of what comes next. Mm-hmm. I feel I relate so much to just going, the goal was never to become a full-time content creator. That was a total surprise to me. And yeah, I am kind of exhausted after trying to make new videos, interesting videos, funny videos every day for the last 5 years.
Austin, your lighting setup exhausts me. Yeah. Every time I see your video, I'm like, this motherfucker has four different lights up. I know how much, you know, and a soft glow on the skin. Like, sir, you're putting a lot of work into this 1 minute video.
Yeah. I'm excited to be able to slow down and simplify and also reinvest into the things that I really like to do, like writing and directing mm-hmm. and things like that, and acting more and all that stuff. So I really relate. And I also just, I'm so glad you were willing to take the time. I've been a fan for a long time, so this is really cool. It's really nice chatting with you. Where can people find you if they? I'm going to link all your stuff in the description.
But yeah. Thank you. Well, if it hasn't been painfully obvious, I'm putting that time into that YouTube channel, youtube.com/CHESCALEIGH. That's Cheska Lee. My middle name is Lee. I'm also on Threads. I'm also on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook. I also have merch. I had, you know, my viral leopard song, and I launched my own merch inspired by it. My undergrad's in graphic design, so I designed everything myself. It's at shop.francesca.net. That's Francesca with an H, FRANCHESCA. I might go back. I might start a Patreon. I don't know. I haven't figured out what I want to do, but it is something I've been toying with. My hope is that my show goes this year, and I don't have time. But in the meantime, I'm really excited about making long form stuff again. It's really hard, but it scratches a part of my brain that has been in dire need of attention.
Yeah, it is. It takes a lot more effort, takes a lot more time, but I really like doing it. And yeah, I'm excited to do the same thing. So yeah, I hope everybody goes and follows and watches what you got coming out next. And I hope that show goes too. I hope you're too busy to be making too many videos for us, you know?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Well, cool. This was awesome. And thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Best of luck. All right. So that was my conversation with Francesca. I am so grateful to her for taking the time to do this. Thank you, Francesca. If you guys don't follow her already, you absolutely should. I've been a fan of hers for a long time, so it was kind of cool to get to talk to her. I meant that when I said that in the interview. And yeah, she's been around for a while. I think she's going to have the staying power that I fear I won't have. She's got a foothold on several different platforms. And, for those of who might not know, I kind of lost everything tonight. There are a lot of creators, a lot of my friends that do this full time who are lucky enough to have a solid foothold with their audience on multiple different platforms. They've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of YouTube subscribers or potentially millions of YouTube subscribers. They've got hundreds of thousands or millions of followers on Instagram, hundreds of thousands or even millions of followers on Threads and other places like that. And they've got lots of different footholds in lots of different areas. In the 5 years that I was doing TikTok full time, I built my TikTok audience up to 1.4 million people, and I just was never able to do that anywhere else on the internet. What I'm left with after tonight is I have an Instagram account that's at about 100,000. It's right now it's at about 98,000. That could go up over the weekend. Who knows? And I've got a YouTube channel that's just over 40,000 subscribers right now. Again, that could go up over the weekend. I don't know. And I've got a Threads account that is just under 30,000. So all said and done across three platforms, I'm left with somewhere in the vicinity of like 150,000 followers. And there's probably a lot of people who are repeat followers on these different platforms. So it's somewhere between 100 and 150,000 would be my estimate. But what that means is that, you know, I lost 1.3 million followers and am left with relatively very few. And I'm going to continue making this show. I'm going to continue making this podcast. I'm going to continue making content for YouTube. I'm going to continue making the Oneer podcast with my friend Kramer England. I'm going to continue making videos. And I'm going to continue trying to build these channels and build these communities. But yeah, I'm not alone in this. There are a lot of creators out there like me who TikTok was their biggest platform by orders of magnitude, and there is no other platform that even comes close for them, and they just sort of lost all of it. They just lost years of work, and you know, this happens. This is a thing that it just happens in life, is impermanence and change, and I, you know, I'm grateful for the 5 years that I was able to have. I'm going to continue working and doing what I do. I'm going to continue making things. That's what I've always done, even before I ever had an audience for it. I was making things. I'm going to continue making music videos and music and writing and trying to act in movies and TV shows and just doing what I do. And I hope you'll follow along, and I hope to see you out there, and I hope we cross paths in other realms of the entertainment industry going forward. But yeah, this is a very weird time. And like I said in the intro, it feels oddly ominous. I feel like my conversation with Francesca was very positive, and I'm grateful for that. I think that we should be positive right now and try to focus on what we have and try to focus on what the future is going to look like and where we are going from here and what the next moves are. But also, like I said, something about this feels so off and strange and dystopian to me, if I'm being completely honest. Because even if Donald Trump does say, let's bring it back for a 90-day period after he's inaugurated on Monday, it's going to sort of feel like the first episode of Severance season 2 for me. It's going to feel a little bit like we just wake back up in the building and they go, oh, welcome back. You know, sorry about that. That was weird. And, you know, let's get back to work here. And it's, I think that the app's never going to quite feel the same now that we know it can just turn into this thing that just says, sorry, no longer available. And if it does come back to the United States permanently, I think we're all going to have a lot of skepticism toward it, of like, what is this now, and who's operating this, and what changes to the code were made so that it would appease the American government, and what did they need to see done in order for them to allow it allow us to have it again? Why was there such strong bipartisan support for the ban in the first place? It just feels like there's information that we are lacking that we don't have. And even if we get it back, it's going to continue feeling off in some way. It's going to feel like, to me right now, sitting where I am, Saturday night, the app just got banned. It sort of feels like a before and after moment. It feels like there's been a shift culturally. And I don't know if it's a shift for the better or if it's something that feels like a tipping point. I don't know. Only the future will tell. But we're heading into the second Trump presidency, and our government has just unilaterally supported a move of kind of authoritarian, fascistic censorship that I've never seen anything really like this in my lifetime. I've seen the Republican Party do plenty of really terrible, draconian, authoritarian things, but I've never seen a bipartisan-supported bill like this that's so detrimental to so many people, that is supported by both Democrats and Republicans. And so I don't know what's next up for all of us, for us as a country, as a community, as a society. we will just have to wait and see, I suppose. Again, I'm still here. I'm going to keep doing my thing. People like Francesca are still here. A lot of my friends are still here. We're going to keep making stuff. We're going to keep trying to do what we do and push forward. And yeah, that's that, I suppose. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. This would be a great time to support some indie music if you have the means. If you haven't gotten my limited edition double vinyl yet, this is a great time to go check that out and get yourself, add that to your vinyl collection. I could really use the help. Speaking of that, patreon.com/austinarcher. This is a fantastic time to subscribe to my Patreon if you can. I'm putting bonus content on there all the time for the Patreon subscribers, so thank you so much to my Patreon patrons. I really do appreciate your support so much. That's kind of it. Check out the Wonder Podcast, my new podcast with Kramer England, where we talk about movies. We have our own channel here on YouTube, and I'll be linking that in the description as well as all of Francesca's things and the other things I mentioned. We'll see you next time. Until then, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and bye-bye.